Hey, this is Joe Sanfilippo. You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You from a smirk to a smile. That's when music talks to you. Hello and welcome to episode 195 of Geekcast Radio. I am, of course, TF2N Mike, also known as Mike Blanchard, and today I am very excited to have a discussion with Terry Smith as we talk about Music Talks Podcast, his new endeavor. This also allows Terry to redo his list of songs, and we'll talk about other music topics as well. Hi, Terry. How are you, sir?
I am great, Mike, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to redo my list.
So you first started, you're friends with my friend Jesse Jackson. Jesse, yep. And I have done a couple of comic podcasts together about Tom Zoller's Love and Capes comic that Tom Zoller had done. But that's kind of how I found Jesse, was through that and through music. And I've been on Jesse's show once talking about Hall & Oates and, oh my God, Nickelback and everything else and whatever else. And Jesse, I think it was earlier this year or last year, Jesse sent me a, hey, I'm going to invite you to like this page on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, Music Talks Podcast. Okay, I like music. I'll like the page. And I thought it was something he was doing. I didn't realize at the time it was your thing. But I'm like, okay, I'll like the page and I'll just, you know, go on from there. And I didn't really check it out until, I don't know, six or 7 months ago. It was like right after I got out of brain surgery or something is when I started listening, I think. And so, yeah, talk us through your show, your format, and then we'll learn all about you after that.
Okay. The podcast actually came out of something I started doing face-to-face. So I've been a music nut, as we'll probably talk about, all my life. I've also been a hi-fi geek. And I lived for 7 years between 2011 and 2018 in Seattle. And, of course, you know, good old Craftsman House with the big basement. So the hi-fi went in the basement. And people would come round for drinks and food and that. And typically the males, I have to say, at some point we would disappear into the basement. We would stand around in that macho male thing and ooh and ah about the hi-fi. And I'd play something loud. And somebody would inevitably say, we should do a music. You know, wouldn't it be great to have a music evening? So in 2017, I was retiring. I hit the age of 60 and decided that 38 years in IT had been lovely but was enough. And as that was coming up, of course, you start thinking, well, what am I going to do with my time? And I had a dear friend who's actually been a guest on the show and also gave you that great line about from a smirk to a smile, Mike. So thank you for using that. But Larry Hauser, and we were out one night having some food. And I said, when I retire, we should start a music club. And you remember Sheryl Crow did an album called Tuesday Night Music Club. So we sort of joked about it. We should have the Tuesday Night Music Club. Well, anyway, what I did was that I actually started doing that. So on a Tuesday, I would invite a friend around and I'd cook a bit of food and we'd have a couple of drinks and we'd listen to some music on this great hi-fi of mine. And I did probably three or four of those. And, you know, the good old, I worked for 22 years for Microsoft. So the good old Microsoft thing of let's review how this is going. And I thought, well, I think I'm enjoying them and I think my guests are enjoying them, but they do consist of me playing 60 seconds of a track I like really loud, shouting something like, doesn't it sound fantastic? And then playing 60 seconds of another track I like very loud. And I'd said to people, you know, send me through five songs you like or some stuff you want to hear. And the interesting thing was that people didn't. Now, and I get that because when people, you know, send me your favorite songs and it's like, oh God, that's really hard. And I would love to tell you that there was this great moment because I can't actually remember how I came up with the idea of choose a song from each decade. But anyway, that's what I started asking people to do. And it was fascinating because, one, everybody really engaged with it. Two, people played around with the format. Three, you know, people started sending me my long lists and then the medium lists. A really good friend of mine, Chris Voss, he sent his list through and his list from his two teenage children. So basically, I was doing these most Tuesday nights in Seattle. And Jesse, who you mentioned, he invited me onto Setlisting Bruce podcast.
Yep.
And at the end, you know, I mean, you know, he's just a lovable, warm guy. And I just said to him, "Hey, have you got 2 minutes?" And I asked him how he got into podcasting. And I said, "I'm doing this thing. It feels like it could be a good format for a podcast. What do you think?" And God bless him, because, you know, as Brits, at the end of the day, we're still pretty reserved. And Jesse did that great American enthusiastic, "That's fantastic. That's brilliant." And I'll be honest, you know, us Brits are also cynical. So, you know, we finished the call and I thought, I better never hear anything from that. But Jesse being Jesse, yep. A week later, I got an email saying, "I've talked to Rob, blah, 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 and you're on." So he and I did a number of pilot episodes, the first of which was him and I sharing our lists, yep. Which is why I'm now getting the chance to redo it. And then from that, I started my own podcast, which, as you say, is called Music Talks. And one final quick story is, originally, the podcast was called Tea Time with Terry, because one of my guests, a guy called Dan Pilling, who'd come round to the house in Seattle, he'd said, "If you're doing these evenings, they need a name." And he came up with the name of Tea Time with Terry. Unfortunately, I then went on a podcasting masterclass and told about 120 people that was the proposed name for my podcast. And when asked, "What do you think the podcast is about?" there were a number of answers. And then this woman looked at me and she said, "Golf." And I realized that I'd come up with the most fantastic name for a golf podcast, but no one had any idea it was about music. So I then changed it to Music Talks. So that's the long answer to your question. And here we are, and I'm loving it, Mike. I mean, you've done hundreds of these things. I'm just hitting 10 or 11, but it's great fun. It's just great.
Yeah, when you've talked about the masterclass you took and how most shows don't get past episode 7 or 8 or whatever, yep. It is. And yeah, in the 11 years that I've been December 8th of this year will be me podcasting for 11 years. June 1st of this year, the Geekcast Radio Network has been online for 10 years. A year ago, as of June 4th, I had mathed up, my buddy Optimus Solo did a whole Excel spreadsheet and mathed out how many shows each of us that have been on the GCRN has done. At that time, a year ago, June, I had just, including the 9-year special we did, I had basically racked up 2011 podcast episodes in 10 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. Years. That's so incredible. Incredible.
So, yeah, I basically blow those numbers out of the water. There's only been one show that I have not been able to get past episode 2, 3, or 4, and that was our Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World review.
Interestingly, what the guy who ran that math class, his view on that statistic was two things. One, it was people not coming up with the right format. Mm-hmm. And two, frankly, people's commitment. And, you know, one of his messages was, if you have a format that you would be doing even if nobody was listening, you're probably onto something.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how I look at it, that says, now, I get incredible satisfaction when I realize people are listening and people mail me and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the conversations I have with people, it's worth doing just for the conversation. The fact other people then get something out of it is a real bonus. So
yeah, and I've said since I've been listening, I've said the whole time, this is easily Music Talks podcast is easily the best podcast of this decade, if not any decade. I'm not saying this just to puff you up. I'm saying this because it's damn true. You know, it's the coolest. Like, your show and another one of my friend's shows, Mike Laidman and Chris Blonsky. Mike Laidman I podcasted with a bunch of times over at This Week in Geek. And he and his buddy Chris started a show called Part-Time Nerds, Full-Time Dads.
That's a great title.
It's basically the two of them talking about fatherhood kind of thing. Yep. And all that and everything else. So I had been listening to podcasts mid-2006 until late 2008. And then Steve and I had gotten, you know, the idea to do shows. And I got the idea to do, you know, the TFG1 podcast, which is the Transformers cartoon review podcast I did. And, you know, it just kind of went from there. And I'm the type of person that I will spend an entire afternoon mapping out a 2-year lifespan of a show. As long as I have 100 episodes written down, whether they happen or not, as long as I have 100 episodes of a podcast written down or however I want to lay it out or whatever, that's all well, good and fine for me. But your show is easily the most interesting music podcast I've ever heard outside of a show called Drop D over on Earth2.net. Basically, it was two buddies, Desmond and Damien, reviewing albums. Basically, right. They would take like Downward Spiral from Nine Inch Nails, and they would review it track by track.
Yep.
So they would basically kind of do what you're doing, where they would play a part of the track. They would then talk about it and discuss it and whatever kind of thing, except obviously it's not music by, you know, one song for every decade you've been alive.
Yep.
So you were born in 1957, so we have 7 choices here.
Yeah. The original format, actually, I wasn't every decade of your life. I just thought, you know, favorite song for the 60s, and it was Larry who came up. He said, I was born in the 50s, I'm choosing the 50s, and then exactly. And then it became. So, yeah, you have seven decades to get through.
Man, I didn't know you were 70 years old. Sorry.
No, I've been carbon dated at 80, Mike.
I think we're all carbon dated at 80 at that point. Sometimes I feel like I've been carbon dated and I'm not even 40 yet. Not yet, anyway. All right, so the 50s. Take us through the 50s and your choice here, which we will reveal in a moment. Why was Sir Cliff Richard and the Drifters your choice for the 50s?
And the Shadows, dear boy. The Shadows.
Oh, the Shadows?
Oh, yeah.
I thought it said that.
It's definitely Hank Marvin and the Shadows. So, let me kick off on, I mean, obviously born in 57, then I don't have, you know, real musical memories of the 50s, but this comes from, I can vividly remember sitting with my mum and dad and my brother, my elder brothers, had two elder brothers, watching our little 9-inch black and white television, and seeing Cliff Richard perform. And the reason I chose him for a number of reasons. I mean, one is, I love my American music. I love Springsteen. I've immersed myself in that. And Bruce, but a lot of other people talk about Elvis being on the Ed Sullivan Show. And, you know, this seismic shift happened and the world was never the same again. Well, Cliff Richard was the British equivalent of Elvis Presley. And I'm not going to pretend it was quite the seismic shift of the Ed Sullivan Show, but there was a show called Oh Boy, and Cliff appeared on that in August 58 with Move It. And, you know, the irony with, as you rightly pointed out, Sir Cliff Richard now is that he went on to be he came out publicly as a very devout Christian, which, you know, in the 60s and 70s in the music industry in the UK was close to career suicide. But he, you know, he became very middle of the road. He was known as what is the disparaging phrase, I guess, now of housewife's favorite. So Cliff is Mr. Safe. And yet what people forget is that in 1958, this man was dangerous. You know, he was viewed as lock your daughters up and all of that. So one, I just love the fact of his journey, and, you know, he's still making records, he's still touring. You look at his numbers, then he sold, and of course, he never really broke the US. He had a couple of We Don't Talk Anymore and a couple of others, I think, got some visibility. But he's very much a UK phenomenon. But he sold 260 million records worldwide. Wow. So the only British artist who sold more is the Beatles. He's had 130 UK top 20 hits, more than anyone, including the Beatles, and 67 top 10 hits. And the only one who beat him actually was Elvis. So, you know, his numbers are impressive, but probably the most significant thing for me is John Lennon, not known for, you know, suffering fools. He was interviewed in the 60s, and his comment was, "Before Cliff and the Shadows, there was nothing worth listening to in British music."
Okay, so here's my thing. I'm going to have to talk to Spotify Cares on Twitter, because they list it as Cliff Richard and the Drifters on Spotify. On your playlist where it says Move It 2002 Remaster, they don't list it as the Shadows. They list it as the Drifters. So, yeah, oh, Spotify, wow. get your shit together. And yes, this is an explicit podcast, so if you feel like the need, I don't edit stuff out, so...
Well, that is amazing, because, I mean, we should briefly talk about The Shadows, because the lead guitarist in The Shadows was a guy called Hank Marvin. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to any Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, Clapton, Neil Young, you know, Neil Young's first recorded song, if you go back to, is basically him, and he admits, imitating Hank Marvin. So as well as Cliff doing, you know, him being, little pun here, instrumental, The Shadows were also a major, major influence on the music, and I'm amazed at Spotify getting it wrong, but there we are. But no, it's definitely Cliff and The Shadows, but I can understand that's what you're seeing at the moment.
I don't know. That's what it says. I don't know why it says that, but that's what it says. All right, so let's take a quick listen to Move It, and then we'll be back, and we'll jump into the 60s.
Soul. Let me tell you, baby, it's called rock and roll. They say it's gonna die, but honey, please let's face it. Well, we just don't know what's going to replace it. Everybody's at Calypso's, I've got nothing on. Real country music that just drives along.
So now that we've moved it along into the 60s, and we've figured out that you'll hear later about Cliff Richard and his band, the 60s, sir, your choice is a Hendrix song, All Along the Watchtower. Now, what was going on in the 60s that you thought back when making your list? What was going on then in your life that this song affected you?
Okay, so if you look at the 60s, a little bit about me. So I grew up near Liverpool, 6 miles from the cavern, actually in a place called Bebington. So it's on the other side of the Mersey. So I always rather romantically tell people, I think one of the many reasons I like Springsteen is that Bebington and Birkenhead to Liverpool is what New Jersey is to New York. Okay. So, you know, Bebington once got voted the third most boring town in Britain.
Wow.
You know, Birkenhead is all shipyards and stuff. But basically, you grow up looking out over the Mersey and seeing the Liber buildings and thinking that's where all the fun is over there. My dad, Scottish, worked on the docks, union leader, a man not short of opinion, and I certainly get that from him. And my mum, Liverpool Irish, and ran worked in a greengrocer's, then ran my uncle's shop. So I always tell people that I'm British in the basis and not English in the basis that Scottish father, Irish mother, born near Liverpool, which is a bit of a, you know, we talked about your background, Mike, but mm-hmm. Liverpool considers itself a different place to the rest of the UK. Right. And I then later went to university in Wales. So I always say I'm British. And I also had two elder brothers, Owen and Jim. So Owen was 8 years older than me and Jim was 7. So, and my dad was very musical. So music was a big part of the family. But growing up in the 60s near Liverpool, music was a big part of everyone's family because, you know, the Beatles were just the biggest thing and they were local. And there was genuine, and I don't think this is me sort of thinking back and doing post-event rationalization. There was this whole thing of change and I was seeing it. You know, my brothers were growing up. You know, long hair, which if you look at it now, wasn't long hair. My eldest brother, Owen, actually left home at 16. He was thrown out of the house by my dad because he wouldn't get his hair cut. We lived at 36 Stanton Road and he ran away to 40 Stanton Road, which is where my grandmother lived and moved in with her. So he managed to move two houses up the road. But that was, you know, all of this change was going on. So when I look at the 60s, that's the word that sort of comes out. And I always quote to people, you know, the Beatles' first greatest hits, they came out with, when it was still on vinyl, there was a blue album and a red album. I can never remember which way it was around, but one was from 63 to 67, the other was 67 to 70. But what they did, if anyone's not seen those, is that one album had the cover of the Beatles' first album on, and then the second album was exactly the same shot, the same location, 7 years later. And they've gone from, you know, Italian suits and neat haircuts to Afghan coats and beards and long hair. And I've always thought that's a brilliant image to just show what happened in those 7 years. And if you listen to their music, you know, it's the same thing that they've gone from, you know, love, I want to hold your hand or please, please me to, you know, Strawberry Fields and the end and all of that stuff. So trying to find a song to represent the 60s and change. And the reason I chose this, you know, it's a Dylan song done by Hendrix. And for me, if you look at it lyrically, Dylan, you know, just ripped up the rule book in the 60s of what a song was. And one of the story I always trot out was the famous Playboy interview where the guy said, you know, people spend a lot of time working out what your songs are about and you're not very forthcoming. And he said, oh, I'm happy to tell you what my songs are about. And the guy's like, really? And he said, yeah. He said, some are about 3 minutes long, some are about 5 minutes long, and some are about 11 minutes long. And, of course, he did write 11-minute songs. So lyrically, I think he ripped the rule book up. And then Hendrix, I think musically, and particularly with the guitar and the three-piece, you know, he redefined what was possible with that. So I think the combination of the two is, you know, I love the song. I did a project when I was 16 at school. I managed to convince my teacher not to do the Romantic Poets that I'd do a piece on All Along the Watchtower. So I've always loved the song. And I'm a sucker for a cover version, and particularly cover versions that redefine a song. So this is actually the song that Bob Dylan has played live more than anything else he's written. And I love the sort of irony that he plays it in the style of Hendrix, not the way he wrote it. So for all of those reasons, and I just think it sums up the 60s. And I guess the final thing is, you know, I love songs that the start just hits you in the face. And this is one of those songs, you know, that opening riff is just like, whoa, what the hell is that? So for all of those reasons, it's All Along the Watchtower by Hendrix.
Let's take a listen to that, and we'll compare it to, not that we are going to compare it to, but we'll also get to listen to the Dylan version as well. after we hear Hendrix and Dylan.
That's smart.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief.
All right, folks, now that we've heard from two legends in Jimi Hendrix and Bob Dylan, we head on into the 70s and your teenage years, sir, and apparently you want to go to California.
Yeah, so I became a teenager May 1970. Now, of course, I became a teenager and instantly thought that I'd just missed the best decade there ever was with the 60s. And there's an element of that, I guess. But it was the decade, I mean, as I say, music had always been around me and the family, but it was when I really started getting my own music. And that was a big thing for me, having two elder brothers, was that I loved a lot of what they listened to, and actually their tastes were very different, but it was about getting my own stuff. I bought my first two albums, I bought them on the same day, and I actually bought them from Richard Branson's very first advertisement as for what became Virgin. He was doing mail order at the time, but it was After the Gold Rush by Neil Young and Led Zeppelin One. So I guess, you know, it was always going to come down to one of those, and I chose Led Zeppelin. You know, it was actually really hard to do. I mean, each decade was hard for me, but this was probably the hardest in that I am retentive enough. I am the classic archetypal male who does lists. So I have my very pretentious 100 best albums of the 20th century. And, of course, it's no surprise that literally 25% of those are between 1970 and 1975. So I always said to my son that be careful what you're listening to between the ages of 14 and 19, because you'll spend the rest of your life listening to it. The reason for deciding on this track, there's a couple of things, because I mentioned, I think, about being a hi-fi nut as well as a music mm-hmm. nut. And in 1970, we moved house. And for some reason, I was up in, there was a little loft up there. It wasn't a big house, but a little loft. And I found in the corner this old Bakelite, you know, the big old brown with the mm-hmm. speaker grill. I found this thing. And I brought it down to my little bedroom, and I managed to put a new plug on it, and I plugged it in, and it was all, I think we call it valves, you call it tubes, but it was all tubes, and I plugged it in, and the lights came on, and it worked. And I don't, again, think this is nostalgia. It sounded absolutely bloody fantastic. And literally, a couple of weeks after getting that working, I can still, like, play the movie in my head. But Led Zeppelin played a one-hour live show on the BBC at 7 o'clock. It was a show, I think, called Sounds of the 70s. Okay. And I remember sitting in my bedroom listening to that show, just being beyond excited. And actually, the version I've chosen is the BBC later, but I think only about 3-4 years ago, released that. And then another thing is that, you know, America always held, one of the reasons being, I think, my love of music, but this fascination, you know, everywhere in America sounded exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a great Elton John story that he wrote a song about Grimsby, which is an awful shipping town up on the east coast of Britain, and they said, why have you done that? And he said, well, when I was growing up, I'd listen to 24 Hours from Tulsa and Galveston, and he said, these places all sound so excited. And he looked and he said, have you been to Galveston? And the guy says, no, he says, it's a shithole. Now, I don't know whether that's actually right, but I think the point is everywhere in America sounded exciting, and it was where everything was possible. So going to California holds a lot of memories, and actually they played it on that BBC show. I got to see them live twice. The first time was great. The second time was my 18th birthday, and it was a real disappointment because they were rusty. But they played Going to California both times. And then last year, just before I left Seattle, I saw Robert Plant for the first time in, 43 years. And he played Going to California. So,
oh, wow.
And I have to say that, and people see this as heresy, of those three shows, the most enjoyable, impressive was Robert Plant solo.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. So that's my choice.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's take a listen to Led Zeppelin, and we'll be back after that.
Days with a woman of kind, smoked my stuff and drank all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start. Going to California with an ache in my heart. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes and flowers. My chances on a big jet plane. Never let them tell you that we're all the same. The sea was red and the sky was gray. I wondered how tomorrow could ever follow today.
All right, so we've been to California. I'm often called a fool in the rain. So there's that. That is, like, I've slowly been rediscovering Led Zeppelin because they were kind of before my time.
Sure.
And for some odd reason, I don't know where I heard it in the last 6-7 months or whatever, but I kept hearing Fool in the Rain, and I'm like, I gotta go listen to this. And that song has such a great tune to it. The lyrics are great, but that music that they made up for the... Oh, God, I love that.
Yeah, and I guess one of the other things I should say about going to California is, you know, there are so many of the sort of heavy rock. I mean, obviously Stairway to Heaven, but things like Trampled Underfoot and Kashmir, which I think people, you know, associate more typically with Led Zeppelin. But I think one of the things that made them so brilliant was that they were never the archetypal heavy rock band. You know, they always had a folk side to them. They always had different things in there that spice things up. So, you know, I do enjoy going back to their stuff, I have to say.
Absolutely. So we head into the 80s, best decade ever. and your choice for the 80s is not... It's not any song I've heard of in the... It's very original. Because when I think of the 80s, I think of, you know, the synth pop, the pop yep. rock, the Hall & Oates, the Rod Stewart, the Billy Joels, the Madonnas. I think Justify My Love was the first song I got hard to. Maybe that's too much information for folks, but I don't care. I was, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever when that Madonna song came out.
At least it's understandable.
Well, yeah. Hello, have you seen that video?
Absolutely.
So take us through the 80s. You're out of your teen years.
So, you know, I've out of my teen years, I've been to university. I worked in Holland on building sites for a year, so I was the insulation engineer on Holland's largest ever coal store, which was a bit of a surprise because my only qualification was I had an English degree and I'd worked in my uncle's greengrocers, and we used to have a very small coal store to put the vegetables in. And then I'd started working. So it's interesting you say 80s the best decade ever, because I've and if you look at the previous time I did this, and I've said it quite often, in my head I always say I'm not the greatest fan of the 80s, and I think the reason for that is actually that 80s production sound. You know, there is so much stuff that you listen to, you go, you know, and I include Springsteen here. You know, I'm one of those people who thinks Born in the USA is his weakest album. Actually, it's got some great songs on, but the production is just awful. But I went back a couple of days ago because I mentioned I have my list of 100 great albums, and I went back to check, and actually 29 of my 100 are in the 80s. So it was clearly a better decade than I remember.
Coming soon to the Geekcast Radio Network, Terry Smith's top 100 albums of the 20th century.
Oh, would you say? You won't know, and you will also recognize this, Mike, as obviously compulsive like I am, that I have toyed with the idea of blogging my 100 best albums.
Oh, no. Trust me. That needs to be a podcast, whether it's broken. No. I have a we'll talk about that off air. I have a perfect.
I'll send this. Okay, so, yeah. In amongst all of that, the reason for choosing Murray's Prayer is, you know, I subscribe to Spotify. I'm nerdy enough to subscribe to Tidal because the quality's better. I love the fact that, you know, you can get to all the music in the world, but the old fart in me does get nostalgic for that. And remember, in the 80s, you know, I'm driving 40, 50,000 miles a year. I'm a rep in the IT industry. I'm spending it. You know, the great thing is this was before there was mobile phones. So you used to go out calling on customers and no one could get hold of you. Yep. It was fantastic. But I listened to a lot of music during that time, and I listened to a lot of radio. And this song by Danny Wilson, and they're a Scottish band, you know, and the irony is, you know, now back living in Scotland. This is from their first album. They did 3 albums, but the reality is the first one was vaguely popular. The other two bombed. And then I think most of them actually got out of the music industry. But it's one of those fantastic pop songs that whenever, if it comes on shuffle, if I hear it, it just lights me up. And, you know, the opening line is, everything is wonderful, being here is heavenly. Yep. And I just think it's something like 3 minutes, 43 seconds of just pop genius. And I will always love it.
Yeah, it was when I was listening to it, I'm like, this is very different. This is very non-80s. This is very redheaded stepchild of the 80s kind of thing. Not in a bad way, but like, I'm like, because again, I'm thinking like, I'm not saying you were going to pick, you know, Piano Man or, you know, something like that, you know, and I'm not, you know, and the whole point of your format is it's not whatever the most popular song is of the decade. It's what song from that decade speaks to you or has, you know, has you a story. If you go back to the episode of Music Talks I did, folks, my four choices are all story-driven. They were never the biggest number one hits of whatever. I think the Hall & Oates song might have been, but whatever. And I'm listening to this, and I'm looking through the lyrics, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
This is a really great song that steps out of the 80s stereotype.
And seriously, I would try and listen to the album, because it is different. But you know, my final comment I think would be this, which is my wife unmercifully takes a piss at me that if we ever do pub quizzes and it's like, what year was this song, I am consistently wrong, but I'm never wrong by more than 1 year, right? But I'm almost always out. But I can tell you, Mary's Prayer was 1987. So it will always be sort of that time in my life, I guess.
Awesome. Well, let's take a quick listen to some verses from Mary's Prayer, and we will be back after that.
Everything is wonderful. Being here is heavenly. Every single day, she says, everything is free. I used to be so careless, as if I couldn't care less. Did I have to make this mess when I was Mary's prayer? Suddenly the heavens rolled, suddenly the rain came down, suddenly it was washed away. Celebrate. I made such a big mistake when I was Mary's prayer. So if I say,
right now it is time to get into the 90s, and the 90s was a decade to remember, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in many ways. So yeah, the 90s for me, I was, I guess, in the classic mid-30s sort of corporate thing. So I'd got married in 88. My son Cannon was born in May 1990. You know, work was going well, which meant promotion, which actually meant less traveling, less time to listen to music, more time at work. And then in 95, I stumbled into this, at that time, still in the UK, viewed as relatively small company called Microsoft. and when I took that job, my wife, at the time refused to move from where we were living. And it meant, you know, my round trip to the office was best part of 200 miles. So I was going to be doing a lot of traveling. And therefore, I decided, okay, I'm going to I bought a secondhand car and I put a really good hi-fi in there. Right. It was like, I'm going to enjoy. And that actually sparked, I mean, I'd still been listening to music, but it had become, just out of a function of time and other pressures, it had become less. It's probably the period in my life when it was the least significant. But two things happened. One was getting that job and traveling. So that got me back into listening and music and hi-fi. And then the other thing was, of course, in the mid-90s in the UK, there was this thing called Britpop and Oasis and Blur and, you know, and it was a classic replay of the Stones and the Beatles battles in the 60s, because, you know, the Beatles were from Liverpool in the north and the Stones were from London in the south, and one was working class and one was posh. And here we were 30 years later and it was exactly the same script. And the irony is, I've chosen an Oasis song for reasons I'll explain, but I'm actually a much bigger Blur fan. I think Damon Albarn is a massive, massive talent. And whereas I think Oasis had, you know, they were a supernova in that they had their couple of years. But Noel Gallagher, I think, is still a talent. Liam, my view is he's been overrated from day one. But that's probably the subject of another podcast. But the reason for choosing Oasis and choosing Don't Look Back in Anger is at the end of 95, early 96, wherever you went, you know, there was Oasis. I mean, I remember my first day in Microsoft was the annual company meeting, and actually this song I was chosen, you know, that was used in one of the videos, and, you know, wow. you turn on the radio and backing music on television. And the real strong memory for this is we've always been pretty good at having family parties, and it was my niece's Cara's 18th birthday. And the good news is that then allowed me to go back and check the dates. So it was June the 4th, 1996. And we're in this village hall and all of the extended families together. And I'm standing with my son Callum, and the DJ put on this. And I looked around, and literally everyone was singing. We were singing. My dad was singing, you know, young and old. And it actually, it felt like, going back to what I said about the 60s, it felt like the Beatles were back, in the sense of here was a band that had crossed over. You know, they weren't a pop or a rock band anymore. Right. They were, everybody knows who Oasis is. Everybody's singing Wonderwall and wondering what is a Wonderwall. You know, everybody's buying this album. So for me, it will always be the ultimate 90s song. And you know, there were quite a few other candidates. You know, I mentioned that Callum was born in 1990, so I'd have loved to have chosen a song for him. And you know, Bruce does a brilliant song called Living Proof, which is, it's about his son, first son being born. It's one of my favorite set of lyrics. The trouble is, the music and the arrangement, I have just never liked. you know, even, and normally when he plays things live, he moves it around, and it's just never worked. And if I could ask him to ever re-record one song, it would be Living. You know, when I joined Microsoft, it was literally 2 weeks before Windows 95 was launched, and Start Me Up was, you know, we paid the stupid amount of $6 million to use Start Me Up. So there were loads of other candidates, but this will always be the song that, and again, I think you said, Mike, you're very visual. The moments that stick with me, I do have a video in my head, and it's very playing cool at the moment. You know, I can see that party and I can see the song playing, so that's why I've chosen it.
And the funny thing for me is, before we get to hearing a part of the song, is that, like, right before you sent me your Spotify list, I heard this song somewhere. I don't know where it was. Like, just out of the blue. It wasn't on the... I don't think it was on the radio. It might have been on the radio. I don't remember. It was somewhere, like, a week before you sent me your playlist, and I was like... Oh, and when I saw the poem, I'm like, oh, hey, I just heard that the other day.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I haven't heard Wonderwall in at least 20 years. It was never. Oasis for me, Wonderwall's an okay song. It's kind of cool. But all as I remember about them is all the drunken brawls and all the news. Oh, my God. What is Noel and Liam done now? And all the celebrity crap to do with them. But let's take a listen to Don't Look Back in Anger from Oasis.
You've seen
right, so we've survived the Y2K bug. We are now in the new millennium. And what's going on in the 2000s for you, sir? You're married, you're working at Microsoft, you've had your son. Your son is 10 years old at this point. What's going on in the Smith household after the Y2K scare?
Well, I guess the first thing I should say is that I did actually have to work really hard not to be working on New Year's Eve on the Millennium, because literally we had an army of people lined up and 16 phone calls came in. Wow. So, yeah, the Y2K, that's another subject. So what was happening for me personally, sadly, is that my first marriage was sort of starting to fall apart. Alvina and I split up mid-2000s. I then met Laura and got remarried on August the 2nd, 2008. And that's really the driver of my choice, because if it was just a musical choice, then I would absolutely choose something from Wilco. They're a band I love. I saw them again recently, about 6 weeks ago. But for me, they're a band who really peaked during this decade. And just for completeness, if I was choosing a Wilco song, it'll be Impossible Germany. And I've said this before on Music Talks. If anybody wants to get on the show and they want to influence me, just choose Impossible Germany as your choice and you're in. But it would be absolutely wrong of me to choose a Wilco song because, as I say, Laura and I got married in 2008. Best thing that ever happened to me. I'll leave her to comment on it from her point of view. But the song I've chosen is by a band called Elbow, another band from the north of England. And it's a song called Starlings. And it should have been the song that Laura walked up the aisle to. The reason it wasn't was that we actually only heard the song on our honeymoon. And it literally was, we were on a flight. We had the delight of going to South America. And I heard this song, and literally we sat next to each other, and I just stopped. And it was on the British Airways channel. And I listened to it again, and then I said to Laura, you've got to listen to this. So, by the way, the song she did walk up the aisle to was First Day of My Life by Bright Eyes, which I think was a pretty good choice. But the reason I say this should have been the one is that it would be the last episode of Music Talks. My guest was a lady called Jen Henshaw, and she talked about there are times when you hear a song and you think, right, somebody's just got inside my head and they've written down, you know, I've written this song. So the lyrics of Starling, if I can quote a couple of them, it starts with, I sat you down and told you how the truest love you'll ever find is for oneself. You pulled apart my theory with a weary and disinterested sigh. Laura and I had that conversation. And by the way, she was the one pulling apart the theory with the weary and disinterested sigh. It also includes probably my favorite ever sort of, you know, if you're writing a one-line love poem, which is, you're the only thing in any room you're ever in. But one of the reasons I love sort of music from the north of England is that there's always a sting in the tail. And there is a noticeable age gap between myself and Laura. So the actual lyrics read, you're the only thing in any room you're ever in. I'm stubborn, selfish, and too old. So, yeah, if you listen to that song, it's our song. And, you know, the final thing I would say is that if you go onto YouTube, Elbow were invited by the BBC Concert Orchestra to come and perform the whole album that this track is off, and that album's called Seldom Seen Kid. They did it at Abbey Road, and it's just an absolute delight. So I'd encourage anyone who listens to this and likes it to go and have a look at that. And you will hear Guy Garvey, who's the lead singer, who actually now has his own show on the BBC, but he's got one of those great northern accents. He's from Bury near Manchester. And, you know, it's like, getting to play with this orchestra is the biggest privilege we've ever had. And Glenn Miller played in here, and the Beatles, and people start cheering, oh, you've heard of them, have you? So you get this, and then the man opens his mouth, and this beautiful voice comes out. So take a listen.
Yeah, take a listen to this, folks. When I listened to it, I was like, oh, this kind of reminds me of my wife, Karen, having me listen to The Cure, a couple of The Cure songs, because the intro to this, it, like, this song is more instrumental than it is lyrical. It has lyrics, but the music throughout Starlings is just wonderful, and it's interesting, and it's just great. So have a listen, and we'll be back with the current decade after this.
Ignore my invitations, he'll have to go. So to the bunchy luncheons with, it's second on my list of things to do. At the top is stopping by your place of work and acting like I haven't dreamed of you and I and marriage in an orange grove. You are the only thing in any room you're ever in. I'm stubborn, selfish and too old.
Before we get to the current decade, one last comment on Elbow's Starling, sir.
Yeah, it was just that, one, I'm delighted that you love the music in that. But you know how it opens. And I remember reading a review that said, why is it that the first track of every Elbow album sounds like the hatch opening in 2001? Which I just thought was a brilliant, you know, you get that and then the horns coming in. So yeah, not true of the later stuff, but the first four or five albums all start with this sort of twinkly thing and then bang. So yeah, as you can tell, a favorite band of mine.
Very cool, very cool. All right, so the current decade, you can't make up your mind. You can't make a choice.
Well, so, so this is where I have to be completely honest, which is I tend to be quite, I hope I'm not draconian, but I'm quite firm with my guess of you. With some of your choices in that. I mean, I suspect I've got an Excel spreadsheet with all of the different versions of these, of what was going to be my choice. But the one I struggled most with probably was the current decade. And not because, you know, I've had a number of guests who say, you know, the later on you get, the harder it gets because there's less new music you like. I personally don't subscribe to that. I actually think there's as much, if not more, great music around today than there's ever been, and of course the fantastic thing is it's easier and easier to find without spending money. But yeah, this one has been the challenge for me. And when I initially did it with
Jesse,
I referenced Jason Isbell, who I think is the finest songwriter certainly this decade. And he's right up there with some of the greats. But I chose a song from War on Drugs called Red Eyes. And basically, one, I love them. But also, my rationale for that was, I think they're one of those bands where it sounds of today, it sounds current, and yet in there is lots of nice references. You know, you can hear Springsteen, you can hear Petty, but not in a, oh, they've copied. Right. You know, it's like a melting pot where the current and modern, but they've got all of that history. So that's what attracted me. But to be honest, in the now probably 18 months since I did that first one with Jesse, Jason Isbell has just become someone I've got to love and love and love more. And, you know, I actually think he's written the best love song since Starlings, and it's called Vampires. But I decided, whilst I know I confuse you, Mike, in my head at least, I decided not to go with Vampires simply because I'd chosen a fantastic love song. But again, if any, go and listen to Vampires and its rationale of 40 years together. It's beautiful. But the song I've chosen is a song called White Man's World. And my rationale for this is, we all know that has this decade been challenging, and I'm not talking personally, but, you know, if you look at what's happened in the last 5 or 6 years, both in your country and in mine and across Europe, you know, I do honestly think we are living through one of those periods that in whatever 30 years time, history will look back and go, what the fuck happened? I think one of the things for me is then what does the individual do in those circumstances? And, you know, the words that come into my head, Bruce used this in the Broadway show where Martin Luther King's, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it points towards justice. And it's like, yeah, I kind of buy that. And then there's that thing of, you know, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Right. And what I think Jason does in this song brilliantly, because I love angry protest songs, but I like really clever songs that just make you think. And, you know, the lines that really pop for me is, I think it's the third verse, but I'm a white man looking in a black man's eyes, wishing I'd never been one of the guys who pretended not to hear another white man's joke. So the reason that hit me so hard is I think it's so easy for us, certainly for me, to, you know, hey, I'm not racist, I don't do this, I don't do that. But I think that brilliantly posts the question of turning a blind eye and doing nothing when you see things that actually you don't agree with. You know, is that any better than somebody who's doing something bad? So, you know, it's the reason I love him as a songwriter. I love his music. There's a live at the Ryman album, which if anyone ever says, well, there's Jason Isbell and then there's this Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit. If you want to know why he has a band, listen to that live album, because they just enhance what are brilliant songs. But I think he's a brilliant songwriter. So that's why I've eventually chosen, and I'm not changing ever again until the next time.
until the next time, exactly.
I've chosen White Man's World.
All right. Well, because this is my show and I'll do whatever the hell I damn well please, we're going to hear all three of Terry's choices because he can't make up his mind. So we'll hear selections from War on Drugs and the two Jason Isbell songs. And we'll be back after this.
Not the long flowing dress that you're in, Oh, the light coming off of your skin, the fragile heart you protected for so long, or the mercy in your sense of right and wrong. It's not your hand searching slow in the dark, or your nails leaving love's watermark. It's not the way you taught me off the roof. I'm a white man living on a white man's street. I got the bones of the red man under my feet. The highway runs through the burial ground, past the oceans of cotton. I'm a white man looking in a black man's eye. I'm wishing I'd never been one of the guys who pretended not to hear another white man's joke. Oh, times ain't forgotten. There's no such thing as someone else's war. Things worth fighting for. You're still breathing, it's not too late. We're all carrying one great burden, sharing one
it, folks. Seven songs, seven decades, all of Mr. Terry Smith's life, his musical choices, his musical influences, his indecisiveness when it comes to this current decade. You know, all of that. Very, very awesome. I'm glad we had the chance to do this. I'm glad we had the chance to actually get your choice down for the current decade.
Me too.
And I did listen to that initial. I actually listened to both. I actually got confused when prepping for this. I listened to the previous, like the introduction that Jesse did for Music Talks. And then I'm like, oh, wait, they're not talking about their choices in this episode. Where's the other one? So then I went to the remastered episode 197 that it, or 179 that he did.
Right.
And I listened to like the first maybe 20 minutes and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm talking to this guy. I need to come into the story fresh. I don't need to hear the story and then reference the other episode. So I stopped listening to
good.
The podcast.
Good. Oh, I'm pleased about that. Yeah. And I mean, the other thing I would like to, well, I'd like to say thank you and give Jesse credit for so much, because genuinely, I would not be doing this if it wasn't for Jesse Jackson. The other thing I owe to him is I should go back to that original pilot episode and edit his parts into an episode, or just redo it with him, because
just redo it with him.
You know, he came on to that pilot episode and he told very personal stories, as you did when you recorded yours. And if I'm honest, at that point in my head, it was more of a Muso podcast than it's become. Right. And you know, a lot of that's down to Jesse, because it was just, you know, he started talking and I knew that, you know, I talked about my, I knew I would talk about personal stuff, but one of the joys for me has been how people have approached this. And, you know, probably my favorite example is having Paul Simpson on the show, who I've known for 15 years and considered to be a good friend. And then you find out that, you know, he did this song for his daughter's wedding that I was completely unaware of. So I have learned things about my guests, every single guest, and some of them I've known for a very long time. So that's part of the fun for me. But a lot of that goes down to Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, there's no like, like what I did. I will have Jesse's episode post linked in my show notes on the website for our podcast here.
Yeah.
Don't go back and cut that up. Don't do that to make it, you know, a re-edited version. Get him when he's available.
Do it
say,
again.
Hey, let's do it proper.
Well, I might do it as the first anniversary episode. That would be quite nice, wouldn't it?
That would be timely. Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, I'll do that.
Alrighty then. So talking about, you know, you talking about your format and the slight changes in the stories that were told. It was funny because before we take a quick ad break here in a moment, I came up with two lists at first. I came up with the list that people will hear on my episode of Music Talks. But then I'm like, oh, but I'm also driven by soundtracks and scores and soundtrack songs and things like that. So I came up with a second list, soundtrack score songs from 80s, 90s, 2000s, and
2010s. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're not going to go through that here. It may be an episode at some point. It might be a quick B-sides for Music Talks. Who knows? And maybe that'll be a thing in the future. But for right now, we're going to take a quick ad break. You're going to hear some ads from... You'll hear a new ad from Terry talking about his show. And you'll hear some other ads from other shows that the Geekcast Radio either does or supports as well. We will be back in a moment.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes fun is going to be so funny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Blaine, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Terry Smith, the host of Music Talks, the podcast where I ask guests a simple but beguiling question. Choose a song from each decade of your life and tell me why these songs mean so much to you. Guests and listeners love this format, and if you want to find out why, then take a listen at musictalkspod.buzzsprout.com or use your favourite podcast app. Just search on Music Talks Terry Smith. If you'd like to be a guest on the show and...
Talk to me.
Then send me a tweet at Music Talks Pod. I look forward to doing some music talking soon.
All right, we're back. And you had talked about people messing with the format. And I just mentioned at some point that my soundtrack score list that I have for the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s might be a B-side for Music Talks in the future, not anytime soon. But with me messing with your format, I wanted to see if I could take a band from today and fit each of their songs into the past decades. So that's what's coming up next on Geekcast Radio, folks. You'll hear that. But we want to thank you for listening to us here on Geekcast Radio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. First of all, visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, the home where our files exist, Spreaker, plus any other podcatching client. But we prefer you use the ones mentioned. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes, if anyone still uses iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio is the network Twitter. Mine is at TFG1 Mike. What is your Twitter, sir?
Mine is at Music Talks Pod.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork, and you are on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff as well.
Yep.
What is Music Talks Pod on Facebook?
Facebook is at Music Talks Pod as well, yep.
All right. We hope you enjoyed this episode of GeekCast Radio and wish you'll join us next time as we'll be talking about yet another geeky musical topic as I fit in an Artist of the Decades playlist. For now, I am TFG and Mike with... This is where you say your name.
I just thought I'd wind you up with Terry Smith, and it's been a delight, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, unleash the music geek in you. We will catch you next time, folks.
Do you know what? Look at it. Absolutely says Cliff Richard and the Drifters.
Told you.
Wow. Now, here's the only thing. So I will go away and check. I wonder when Move It came out, whether the Shadows were called the Drifters and then renamed themselves. There's an interesting... See, that's why I love doing this, Mike. You learn so much stuff.
Let's see. Even Wikipedia has it listed as Cliff Richard and the Drifters.
Ah, well, therefore, they must have renamed themselves after the first song. See, okay, now... Cliff Richard and the Drifters. So I've got 1960, there's a Cliff Richard and the Shadows. So I think they must have recorded as the Drifters and then renamed themselves.
That's what this says. It says, recorded by Cliff Richard and the Drifters, the UK band that would later become the Shadows. Originally intended as the B-side to Schoolboy Crush.
Yes, I knew that.
Move It. So,
well, there you go, you see. I've learned something again. That's great.
See? Yeah, something new every day.
The man who does Music Talks and doesn't actually know his own songs. If you tell me that the Led Zeppelin track is actually the new Yardbirds, I'm just going to give up and go. Yeah.